Hello again, you're listening to The Business. You can contact us by text to 51551, by phone to 185715150, email thebusiness@rte.ie or tweet to @thebusinessRTE. There's just a week and a half to go to our next business get-together. That's our business networking event, which is taking place in association with our sponsors Electric Ireland at the Croke Park Convention Centre in Dublin on Wednesday the 26th of February from 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock. Our guest speaker on the night is serial entrepreneur and business champion John Teeling. We'll also have speed networking, experts to help with social media and marketing and lots more. It's free to attend, but spaces are limited. So if you do want to come along, please register in advance by going to our webpage, which is rte.ie/thebusiness, and clicking on the business get together banner on that page. Well, we were speaking earlier about the post-Valentine's Day relationship situation. Well, now we're going to look at a relationship of a very different kind, one that's full of tension. A global power struggle between East and West has been gathering pace. Last year, for the first time ever, less than 50% of all economic activity came from the world's advanced economies. Daniel Pinto is founder and head of one of Europe's largest private investment firms, Stanhope Capital, overseeing billions of investments for wealthy families and institutions. He has just published a book. It's called Capital Wars, the New East-West Challenge for Entrepreneurial Leadership and Economic Success. Daniel, this tension between East and West, what exactly is going on?
There is an economic war going on between Western nations and emerging powers. And my contention in this book is that the reason why we have lost ground over the past 20 or 30 years is not because we don't have cheap labor, not because we don't have natural resources, but because we have been killing our entrepreneurs in the West for the past 20 or 30 years. And we've done that at two levels. We've done that at the level of the large corporations, where the CEOs have become producers of quarterly results, only focus on the short term and not investing anymore in the long term, investing less in research and development, in spending less in capital, you know, expenditure, and therefore sacrificing the future to basically please the financial markets. So we've done that at the level of the large corporations, and we've done that at the level of the SMEs, which are today deprived of funding. Banks are no longer lending to SMEs, even 5 years after the crisis. Venture capital is not available. And frankly, SMEs have lost the respect of society in general. And my contention is that if you are doing that, stifling entrepreneurship at the level of the entire system, you are in effect putting yourself in a position of weakness as compared to emerging powers.
Now, you say there's an economic war going on. Is that not a bit extreme?
No, I think it's really there. I mean, when you see what Chinese companies are doing in terms of copying intellectual rights, when you see what is happening in terms of creating joint ventures with Western companies with a view to actually stealing intellectual property, I think that there is indeed an economic war. And it would be foolish not to see it that way. I'm not saying that we should, you know, take arms, but I think we should be less naive and much more aware of what is going on.
So this is a game for keeps, really. It's about capital and who's going to get to keep it.
It's exactly right. Exactly right. And the Chinese in that war, so to speak, have a tremendous weapon, which is that they have become the creditors of the world, as you know. They are the biggest lenders to the American government. Without them, America would cease to function. And if you are in that position, then it enables you to do all kinds of deals which you couldn't do 20 or 30 years ago.
Now, you mentioned the faults in, as you see it, Western capital, one of which was that the people who run our corporations are focused on the short term. They're focused on serving the stock market rather than focusing on what it is the business really does.
Yeah. I mean, two figures which really are quite surprising, but reflect the reality. The first one is that 20 years ago, the average holding period of a stock was 5 years. So you bought an IBM stock, you held it typically in your portfolio for 5 years. Today, the average holding period is 5 months. 5 months. And these 5 months does not include the impact of high-frequency trading, where the holding period is a few seconds. So if you're the CEO of a firm listed in New York or London, and you know that basically most of your investors are there for 5 months or a few seconds, in the case of high-frequency trading, what kind of incentive do you get? What kind of message do you get? You get the message that what you should do is focus on the quarterly results, is to avoid disappointing the analysts, and basically spend 50% of your time on the road trying to convince analysts that they should recommend your stock. If you do that as a CEO of a large corporation with thousands, if not tens of thousands of employees, you don't have time or the energy or the desire to invest in research and development or think about expanding your production capacity. And that is the problem if you compete against other firms, largely from emerging markets, who couldn't care less about what the financial markets are telling them. Well, because they are still owned by their founders, typically.
Well, if the actions of chief executive officers in responding to stock market, I suppose, signals and playing that game as such is part of the problem, that is driven to some extent in their behaviour by executive pay. So are you saying that the way we pay senior executives in large companies is at the root of the destruction of Western capitalism?
Absolutely. It's a fundamental problem, and it's not a moral issue of how much we are paying, it's how we are paying. When you see that most of these CEOs are paid on the basis of performance assessed over 1 year or 3 years, you're saying to yourself there is something completely wrong. What can you do in 1 or 3 years in a firm where, for example, in the car industry, if you need to reshuffle your product line, it takes you at least 5 or 7 years. In the pharmaceutical industry, if you want to create new drugs, it takes you 10 to 15 years. Why in the world would you give a package of incentives to a CEO based on 1 year when you know that, you know, for example, what has propelled stock markets over the last 3 years is not a rise in earnings, but has been, in effect, QE, quantitative easing. So thank you, Mr. Bernanke, but why would we thank the CEOs of these corporations as if they were at the origin of the rise of their stock, when in fact it's not the case?
The cock claiming credit for the sunrise.
Absolutely, absolutely. And my again, you know, this book is not just about criticizing, it is also about coming up with solutions, but I think that one of the priorities should be for the boards, the directors of these boards, to look at periods of at least 5 years to incentivize the CEOs.
I came across some figures, Daniel, which were about, I suppose, Asian economies. You know, that in 1980, Asia, I think, was 7.6% of the world's output, where it's 26% now. The British economy was 2.5 times larger than China's in 1980, whereas China is now 3.5 times larger than Britain's. China bought 57,000 premium cars, I think, in 2002 and 2012, it was 1.2 million. And the number of skyscrapers in China has gone from 10 to 937 in about 20 years or thereabouts. What is different about capitalism in the East?
I think it is. It resembles what capitalism used to be in the West until 20 or 30 years ago. I mean, they haven't invented anything new. They are just using a recipe which is very compelling. And what is that recipe? Two things I would volunteer. I mean, the first one is that the biggest companies are still in the hands of their founders or the family of their founders, and that puts them at a completely different level than the public companies I was talking about earlier, who are under the pressure of financial shareholders. My contention is that when you keep that link between ownership and management in a business, you have the recipe for investing in the future and being bolder and doing things and daring to do things which you cannot do anymore as a public business. And that's why you see India, China, and a few other countries rising, because that's what they do.
Now, as you say, as they're rising, this kind of war for capital, East-West war for capital, many will wonder, well, what's so wrong with China catching up or with India catching up? They've been a long, 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 long time behind. And is it not a good thing that their standards of living are rising and that they're able to attract capital and play the game themselves? At the end of the day, do we not all benefit from that?
Absolutely, and I would concur. I mean, it's a shame that they are no longer growing at 10% per year and only 7% per year. In fact, I always smile when I see people, you know, almost enjoying the fact that China is only growing by 7% when we are struggling to turn out positive numbers in the West. But anyway, to respond to your question, it is good news that China is growing. It is good news that they are capturing markets. What I dislike is that it's not a level playing field. What I dislike is that we in the West are a bit naive. What I dislike is that we are allowing China, if you take the example of currencies, I mean, China has administered its currencies forever, you know, keeping the renminbi artificially weak. That is not something that we can accept because by keeping their currency artificially weak, they were able to capture markets which we lost. You know, America has lost a few million jobs as a result of the weak Chinese currency. And so, as long as it is a level playing field, I'm absolutely happy about the rise of China, but not when it is artificial.
What do we do about it, Daniel?
I think we need to be a bit more forceful. I wish that the Obama administration were a bit more forceful when it negotiates with China. There is a transition, there is a change in the administration in China. There is a unique opportunity to re-engage at a different level with China from the Americans, but also from Europe, and to obtain concessions which we were not able to obtain until now. And currency is an enormous, probably the biggest concession we could potentially negotiate.
The book is called Capital Wars. I think we will definitely be returning to this topic again in the future. Daniel Pinto, thank you.